At Humana, our Medicare Advantage plans give you coverage and care you can count on, along with guided support to help you feel your best. You could have a plan with a $0 premium or an all-in-one plan that may include medical and prescription coverage, as well as routine dental, vision, and hearing. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The colors of his morning, the darkness of his night, little graves that gave no warning, a sun that brought no light. He saw his whole world breaking, that tortured soul I met, in the prison of his making, the man who can't forget.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to our podcast. I'm Greg.
And I'm Wendy.
And I'm Ben.
And this is House Podcastica, the Wheel of Time edition.
This week, we're covering the Wheel of Time, Season 1, Episode 3, A Place of Safety.
Yeah, so this is the last of the three that were released on opening day. Opening day? Open release day? Whatever.
Yeah, premiere day, whatever you want. Yeah, whatever you want.
Premiere day. So how did you feel about it, Wendy, overall?
You know, when I first did my notes, I was putting something in there about it being slow. But then when I went back and watched it, it's kind of bookended by amazing scenes. And in the middle, there are some slow parts, but there's also some really great important parts. So I think on second watch, I disagreed with my first impressions. I think it's bookended by amazing scenes. And I think so far in the first three episodes, we have these pretty climactic, amazing scenes at the end. And this did not disappoint with that as well.
That's fair. I would agree with you. This was probably of the first three. I think that this is, I'm not going to say my least favorite. You know what? Because the whole scene in the town, like the whole town, Breen Spring. I loved that whole thing.
Yeah.
So it's hard to. The first one might be my least favorite, and this one's my second favorite. I don't know. There are only three episodes, so
yeah. But I would say this one felt more of a setup episode than the others did.
Yeah, but I feel like it had a couple really great payoffs, though.
Yeah,
yeah, I agree with you completely. The whole Matt and Rand storyline in this one, because you know, the first two episodes everything was one storyline. This is broken up into three because of the way episode two was left off. I did like this episode a little bit more upon second viewing as well, but I also realized this time that Amazon had a purpose in releasing the first three episodes, and I think it's because these first three are setting up what the last five are going to give us.
Right.
And I did do my research. It is only eight episodes. They're not. There's not okay, going to be.
I
10.
Thought it was only yeah. 8. Yeah.
Even the wiki, not Wikipedia, but the actual Wheel of Time wiki is only listing 8 episodes. Okay. So we're going to get 5 more episodes after this. By the time we're recording this, the 4th one has already aired. I haven't watched it yet. I like to watch mm-hmm. them before we record on them because it's fresh in my head.
I haven't watched it yet.
So.
I couldn't help myself. I watched it.
The way this episode ended, this is the first time out of all 3 of them that I really wanted to jump immediately into the next episode. And that's what actually helped me realize that realization that Amazon released these first 3 for a reason. Like, instead of doing it for 8 weeks, 1 episode at a time, they put these first 3 out because these really are the backbone of what we're going to get for the remainder of the season.
I've noticed that Amazon does that when they will release, or Hulu or whomever, they will give you the first 3 and it's almost like a setup movie. Mm-hmm. You know, hey, you may not be grabbed by the introduction of all the characters and whatnot, but you may, by the time the 3rd episode's there, be like, oh, now I'm really chomping at the bit in order to get to find out what happens next, because I'm at least a little bit invested in these characters.
Well, anytime a new show airs, that's usually my system anyway, is I usually give it 3 episodes. And if by 3 episodes it doesn't catch my attention, I usually don't continue to watch. There's been a couple exceptions. But for the most part, if after 3 it doesn't grab my attention, I don't watch it anymore. And that might be a reason why they do stuff like this, is you're right. It's basically to grab your attention, to get you invested. Because from this point forward, now we're going to amp it up.
Right.
And now we're going to keep you waiting every week for what's going to come next.
All right. So moving into our top 3. Wendy, why don't you start us off?
All right. My number 3 is Nynaeve. I'm going to say that wrong. How do you say it?
Nynaeve? I think that's it, actually.
Nynaeve?
I say Nynaeve, but like the letter 9 and then Y-A-V-E, but that's just the way that I say it.
I was super excited to see that her arc was not just a 1-episode premiere arc, which I thought it absolutely was when she was gone. I thought that was it. If anything, I thought they're getting rid of the wisdom so that Egwene can take more of a role as, like, now you're the only wisdom left. Mm-hmm. So I thought that made sense to me. So I really thought she was gone. And Zoe Robbins is the actress, and she is just knocking this out of the park. She's amazing. I loved her acting. She's so strong. The flashback to her escaping the Trolloc is really tense, and that's what, when I was saying this is bookended by amazing scenes, that's the scene that I'm talking about. When she rises out of the water and kills that Trolloc, it's like, that's something out of Alien or something.
That, to me, like, that was Apocalypse Now.
Yeah. I didn't even think about that, but when you say it, yeah.
That's when Martin Sheen came out of the water. Like, that's exactly her moment. That was her Apocalypse Now moment.
She looked amazing.
That was super intense.
The spine tingling, yeah.
And the fact that she had to steal the Trolloc's knife in order to stab him over and over and over again, it was nerve-wracking to watch him just continue to spear around. I mean, he's a huge being in this pool that's not giant. I mean,
right?
Maybe a little bit of plot armor, like that protected her a little bit, but I was nervous, even though I know the story. It was crazy. So, I mean, to me, that's a sign of good storytelling.
Yeah.
And then she gives Lan a run for his money, tracking him down and getting the jump on him with the dagger to his throat. She's a fighter. She's a healer. She's super intense. We haven't seen any light moments with her. Yeah,
she's super angry all the time.
And I think she's really a standout in the characters. And I really want to see more of what's going to happen with her.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. There were 2 takeaways that I took from that opening scene, too, with Nynaeve and the Trolloc. to kind of, you know, build upon two points I made in the last episode, the first one, or one point I made in the first episode and the other one I made in second. The first episode with the Trollocs, how I mentioned how these, they stand out as very primitive animals. Man, did we get more of that in this episode too.
Yeah.
Because he's it looks like he's helping a wounded soldier, a wounded ally, which made me second guess myself. All right, maybe they're not as primitive. Oh, no, he just killed them and now he's eating them.
Yeah. Like in the beginning of that scene, I thought that was going to be like a tender moment between the two of them. I'm like, well, look, they actually have feelings and things like that. No.
Yeah, that's how I took it.
It was tender between a man and his meal.
Yeah. I was like, oh, maybe they're more, maybe there's more to the Trollocs than I thought. Nope, he's eating them. He's eating him.
So yeah, they're primitive. Cannibals on top of everything else.
Well, it's that primitive nature. You see a wounded animal and you prey on it. You prey upon it. And even if that means one of their own army, that's basically what it comes down to.
Yeah, that was crazy. And
The other point, though, that I from last week, I don't know if anybody else picked up on this because I didn't pick up on it until my second viewing. I mentioned last episode about how each of the four, you know, Rand and Matt, like they all and Parrot, like they kind of all showed signs that any one of them could be the Dragon Reborn. Mm-hmm. Nynaeve Ave gave us that this episode as well, not just in her badassery, but there's a very symbolic thing that happens in that scene, and I don't know if anybody picked up on it. When she kills the Trolloc and you see the blood coming to the surface, it's in the shape of a dragon fang.
I did not.
And to me, that was kind of like, all right, well, even though they're showing her still alive, because, you know, Moraine did say it could be any one of the five of them initially, and then we thought, well, now it's only four. Now there's five again. They gave us that instinct just in her opening scene in that flashback that she could, in fact, still be one of the five.
And Dana said, is it Dana?
Yeah,
Dana said one of the five. And I think it was Rand that said five.
No, I think
because they all think she's dead.
I think it was Matt that said it. But
oh, Matt,
You could be right, yeah.
No, and yeah, because they don't know she's alive.
Mm-hmm.
None of them do.
Yeah.
Except Moraine and Lan.
All right. Real quick, Ben. Why don't you go ahead and illuminate people to what the Dragon Fang is?
I just took it as in the symbolism of the dragon. If there's more to it, I don't know what you're referring to.
Well, I mean, have they introduced the Dragon Fang in the show yet?
I don't believe so, no.
I don't think so.
That's why I bring it up. I guess this is a little, I guess we'll just do a little bit of book history type thing. So, what Ben's talking about is, almost like the yin and yang looking thing. And if you look at the pool, whenever the blood, before she comes out of the water, whenever the blood spreads out, it looks like a yin yang symbol.
Is it like a comma?
Yes, it looks like a comma.
So that's what the dead horses or cattle.
Yes.
In the shape
The horses or lambs or something like that. Yeah. It's the same shape, but right. Yes. I don't think it's ever been referred to as a dragon fang, and that's just what I wanted to clarify for anybody who, you know, in any non-book readers. That's the symbol of the dragon. From way back in the day.
Okay. I didn't know if you were referring to anything different than that. That's basically what I took it at.
All right. So, Ben, what's your number three?
Well, I mean, Wendy kind of touched on it already, but I want to talk about Dana a little bit. She was a very intriguing new character that we got introduced to who didn't last very long. She is already no longer with us as of the end of episode three. But she was such an intriguing character to me because she seemed like she was somebody who was going to be an ally to Matt and Rand. She was very, you know, very giving with them and enabling them to work to have a room, even though we find out there was an ulterior motive to that. But one of the things that really stood out about meeting Dana was when she is sitting one-on-one with Rand in what essentially becomes a prison cell for Rand, more or less a bedroom, more a cell. There's a whole conversation about how she's you know, she's kind of like, she's proud, not proud, but she's impressed that he was able to get out of Two Rivers, because not everybody's able to do that. She's been in this town all her life, and she wished she had ways to get out. And then when we find out the means of how she planned on getting out of that town, it was basically to be a dark friend. And that kind of plays a little bit more into, and for the life of me now, I can't remember his name, but the wagon shopkeeper from the first episode.
Padden Fain,
yeah. It kind of shines a little bit of light on what Padden Fain could have been at that time.
Right.
Is that he quite possibly was another dark friend. And now it shines a little bit more on that a little bit. I feel like I'm kind of mumbling my point a little bit, but it's like her story of how she wanted to get out, and this was her means of getting out, was to basically be an ally to the Fates, or the Eyeless, as she calls them in this episode. And that even the scarier thought is that how she says that we are everywhere, from, you know, fishermen to, you know, any, like, it literally, these people could be anybody. And that adds a whole new element of danger to these characters now going forward. In that, like, any other show that we've watched, whether it was, like, if we watch Lord of the Rings, we have the trolls. They're very distinctive. We know who they are. And this adds a whole new element to the enemy, is that we have the Trollocs, we have the Fates, we have the...
Fade?
Fade, sorry.
Sorry.
And now we have these dark friends, or friends of the dark, as they're referred to in the book, that literally could be anybody.
And she's been going about her life all this time, just like normal, just waiting for something like this to happen. Mm-hmm. It's almost like she's like in a sleeper cell.
Yeah.
And just, you know.
That's a good way to put
and
it.
And those people are really hard to, you can't spot the enemy like that.
But it also, like, again, now it's going to make you, as a viewer, it's going to make you question every single person that they meet along the way. Because
to quote Strange Indeed, is she a demon?
Yeah.
Am I a demon?
Yeah. Because she was somebody who we, even as viewers, thought she was going to become an ally, even if temporary. And it turns out that wasn't the case at all. So now every person that these characters meet along the way, you're going to question. And that's kind of brilliant writing.
One of the things that you mentioned that is part of one of my other points is that one of the things she said was, you know, dark friends all over the world, from fishermen to queens.
That's the line, yeah.
Yeah, and I was just like, that's that literally tells you that there are, you know, the royalty can be dark friends, the high to the low. Literally anybody that you run into can be a dark friend. And that anybody, not just, you know, people you run into on the street or people who look like spies or whatever, but literally anybody in the show that we don't have confirmation of, like, we haven't seen them, they could be a dark friend.
Yeah. And it makes you question, like, okay, like, who... When she says, you know, from queens to fishermen, or however the line went, again, it makes you question everyone, like, even to the point, like, it crossed my mind, like, okay, could an Aes Sedai even be a dark friend?
Right.
In some way, shape, or form along the way.
And then everybody who's done something for, to, or around this group of people. I mean, she mentioned that she had all five of them in her dreams for... I mean, she said every night, is it for weeks, months, years? Mm-hmm. And she's just waiting for these people to show up. It's just crazy.
Yeah. But that was my number three.
Okay. That absolutely tied into a portion of one of mine. My number three is some of the things that if you aren't familiar with it, you aren't going to have any damn idea what is going on when it comes to what they're saying. So like we've gotten a bunch of language already, you know, Tavarine, Beltane, Aes Sedai, got a whole number of old tongue words. But now we've got some place. And this coming from Dana as well. Go see things, go places. What do you want to see? The Stone of Tyr, the Lion Throne of Camelon, an Ogier Steading. I love building.
She said a trollic.
A trollic. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, hey, we know what one of these four things is.
Yeah.
So I can only imagine that each of those places will come into play later on in the show. I hope that, you know, these are Chekhov's gun, and that's something that I'm really looking forward to. There were a couple of other things that, all right. So the name of the place was Bryn Spring. And thank you, subtitles. That was very helpful.
I need to start doing that.
I do it on my second watch. You have to. It's really hard, especially with their accents.
Yeah. I'm assuming foreshadowing is the concept of, hey, these are some things that are going to come back, and then if you go back and you watch this a second time, you know, once it's all done, we saw a number of them, or oh, hey, this was this or this was that. So we heard about Ishmael, the dark friend that brought the dragon to the Dark One when it was the last age.
Mm-hmm.
And these are all items in the book. These are all locations or people or whatever in the book. And I'm interested to see how they change them and how they introduce them and how they modify the circumstances so that they can, in fact, bring these things to light. So book references, I thought, were really entertaining in this. There's one more to this, and just the words that that Robert Jordan or Brandon Sanderson used early on. So at this point, Robert Jordan. There was a line that stuck with me, obviously, because I'm remembering it, you know, years, maybe a decade later. The dagger blossomed from her, or Tom's dagger blossomed from her throat.
Oh, wow.
And I always thought it was like, oh, it was going in from the front. And so if you were to look like a dagger hilt, then it'd be like, oh, it just appeared there because he threw it so fast and whatnot. And now it makes much more sense because they made that come to life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, oh, the dagger literally comes out of her throat. And you're like, oh, there we go. Words. That totally makes sense. And now I understand a little bit better. It was cool seeing that come to life.
Visualization.
Yeah, my visualization on that was not great until I actually saw it. And I was like, oh, nice. That was good stuff.
I had another point on Dana, and I completely forgot it now. It made me think of it. Oh, I remember what it is now, if you don't mind me going back to it for a second.
Yeah.
In some ways, I literally just thought of this. This isn't in my notes, but to anybody who's familiar with The Stand, you know, Stephen King's novel, the Fade in some way, compare what, you know, what the Fade is doing with Dana and the Dark Friends, it kind of stands out to me as almost the Fade are kind of Randall Flaggish,
mm-hmm.
in that they're mm-hmm. making her believe they're telling her what she needs to be told, because she goes on about that whole speech about how, oh, like we don't want to kill the dragon. We're using him to help us. And
yeah,
that's very obviously what the Fade are telling her to get her to work for them. And that's almost very similar to Randall Flagg in The Stand and how he got his followers and supporters the same way, is he told them what they wanted to hear.
Yeah. That's, I mean, the political, not just aspirations, but political, I'm not even going to say political, it's just literally social engineering. This is what I need. All I need to say to you to make you think that our goals align or our interests align. And hey, you were born in this dirt and you live in this dirt and you toil in this dirt. And then at some point they toss a few shovels on top of you. There's gotta be something more.
Yeah.
And, I can see, especially if they were getting, if Dark Friends, if the Dark One has some sort of incentive program, like if
he's, program,
you're a Dark Friend, so you know you get 10 coppers a month or something like that. If basically to spy, to wait, to continue to deliver, I will wait till my next point to go a little bit further into Dana, who happens to be my second point.
Got it.
All right, Wendy. Number two?
My second point is Dana.
Oh, look at that.
I have figured out by now that this show is really excellent at manipulating our moods and feelings, because I was totally lulled by Dana and Rand. They were just so sweet together. The show lulls you into this sweet, mellow scene, and then pow, it gets you. I liked Dana right away. I thought she was funny and sarcastic. She had a gorgeous smile. She appears to take an instant liking to these two down on their luck young people. She's flirting a little bit with Rand. I thought it was sweet, and I actually thought, like, I'm always thinking about what's going to happen next, and I thought, well, maybe she'll join them, because she's talking about how she's never been anywhere and she wants to leave, and so I'm thinking she's probably going to go with them. They actually talked to her and Rand a little bit about the Wheel of Time. I thought that was interesting. And then, you know, right on a dime, Dana changes everything. She played it very naturally. When she was running after Rand through the town, it was really reminiscent of something like out of Terminator. She was yeah, totally going for it. And when she was talking about, just like both of you said, when she was talking about the darkness, you could tell she truly believed what she was talking about. She believes that the Aes Sedai is the enemy, and that the pain and the conflict and the shit that she's lived in her whole life can be ended by, you know, the darkness. They're the ones who can break the wheel and end all of this. And I thought that last 15 minutes scene was just phenomenal. I'm sorry to see Dana go, because I thought she was really compelling, but absolutely wonderful television. Loved it.
Yeah, that was an interesting turning point too, when that moment where she leans in to kiss Rand and she's like, "Well, I'm," and he backs away and she's like, "Well, all right, maybe I'm pushing this too quickly." And then when she stands up and she pulls her hair in front of her and she's like, "Well, maybe the braid was too much." It was at that moment I was like, "What?"
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, just to be clear, Dana was not, there was not a scene like this in the book. I didn't know it was coming.
Great.
There were scenes similar to this one, but this was not like a out of you know, straight book to movie or book to film or whatever. It was awesome to not know that it was happening and to go, "Oh God." Like I keep getting those moments, right? Like, "Oh, there it is." And it's great. I really, in this whole scene, the whole Breen Spring portion of the episode was, I thought, fantastic. I think it was the most engaging portion of the episode.
Yeah, I agree.
I have a question for you, Greg. When they make those changes, how do you feel about that, being such a lover of the book?
What do you mean by those changes? Like, do you mean adding scenes and stuff like that?
I've usually after we podcast, then I go back and read some other reviews and listen to some other things. And like, it seems like they have changed some major points, and that's, of course, mixed with some people who absolutely hate it and some people who are fine with it. And I was just wondering where you land on that spectrum.
I would say that in general, they are giving me this in a medium that I've wanted for a long time. And so I'm willing to accept whatever they need to do it. I read an article, or an interview with Rafe Judkins, and it was actually really interesting because he was saying like, oh, you know, we have a number of people who love the books in the writer's room. And so they sit and they talk about it and they're like, no, you have to include this person here because they totally come back, you know, in like five books and they show back up and this person does this and this person that. And I can't cast somebody and then hope that they'll be available in four years when I need to put them in. And I'm like, it was the first time that ever actually occurred to me. I was like, oh my God, that's actually a really good point. And it makes me very appreciative of the efforts they're going to make this story, make it not only for the book lovers, but for the public masses. Yeah. And I think that I take any of those changes with a grain of salt. If I ever reach a point where they're like, they change something so crazy that I'm like, oh, this is, you know, I got to get off the crazy train. Yeah. You know, I can't even deal with it. My brain is broken. I will be sure to let you guys know.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks. I was wondering how that was coming.
Yeah. It was it doesn't bother me. Like, I'm literally rereading Eye of the World now, and it's cool to see things. I'm like, oh yeah, that is different. Whatever. it doesn't really bother me.
I can't wait to jump back into it. I picked up the Kindle book and I'm going to be jumping back into it soon.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. So Ben, number two.
My number two. I want to talk about yet another new character that we got however, this one seems like it's going to be a little bit more permanent, at least for now. Tom Marilyn the Gleeman. This was a character that I think I was attached to him from the very first moment we got him. And I do have a vague recollection of him in the book as well. But I enjoyed kind of not remembering a lot about the character so that I could kind of get a little bit of a refresher on it. Because I think there were a little bit, from what I understand, I think there are a little bit of differences to the introduction of the character, but not, I could be totally wrong on any of them. But, I mean, he's kind of like a... He's a bard in some sense. At least he's introduced that way in this episode. I don't think he's going to remain a bard in the way that he performed the music. And one of the things I really want to do that I haven't had a chance and maybe you'll talk about this a little bit more, Greg, is I really want to dive into the lyrics of mm-hmm. that song to find out the meaning of it a little bit more.
Well, let's talk about it then.
Is it if it's not one of your points? Let's talk about it.
No, nope, it's not. Let's talk about it. So again, in my delvings, trying to avoid spoilers, yet also, get some interesting information. This song, they were going to take song lyrics from the book because Tom does a number of songs in the book.
In essence, like a bard.
Yeah, he's a bard.
Okay.
Gleeman, I think a Gleeman is basically a simplistic bard, or a bard is a trumped up Gleeman.
Okay.
This song in particular was one, haunting, two, very, very much dependent on voice intonation. And this is just me. This isn't from the interview or anything, mm-hmm. but it's based on voice intonation, how the pitch change and the inflection of the words as he's saying the different words make you feel, which is awesome. I absolutely had chills listening to it on my second. I mean, the first one, I was just kind of like, okay, I'm just listening and I'm watching. Yeah. And I'm just soaking it all in. My second time through, I literally got chills listening to him sing. So well done on the casting of, I can't remember what the guy's name is, but he was fantastic. But the song is about the last dragon who broke the world. Do you happen to have the lyrics there?
I do not, but if you give me a second, I could possibly pull them up while you're talking.
Okay, so long story short, it is about the story of the last dragon and how he feels after effectively he broke the world. Which is why it is such a sad song. Which is why it is melancholy, but also a little bit terrifying.
Mm-hmm. It's The Man Who Can't Forget is the name of the song.
Mm-hmm.
And I do have the lyrics. The lyrics are, "The colors of his morning, the darkness of his night, little graves that gave no warning, a sun that brought no light. He saw his whole world breaking, that tortured soul I met, in a prison of his making, the man who can't forget. I can still hear the way that he cried for the ones he was missing. I can still hear the way that he cried for the ones he had lost. He saw them in the rivers, he felt them in the rain, in the dreams he heard them whisper, the truth that is the pain. He caused the whole world's breaking, that tortured soul I met, in a prison of his making, the man I can't forget, the man who can't forget." And I seriously, I just got chills reading these lyrics.
I'm listening to you say it. I'm like, it's not as bad as it was when I heard the song, but, so I think that the way this is, and this is not by any, I know that it's, you know, from the interview, and that it's about the story of the last dragon, not the last dragon, but the dragon. And I think that, it is basically the prison of his own making is the guilt that he feels for breaking the world, and all the missing, all the little graves are the children that, that he basically caused the death of. And he has the guilt of literally destroying his entire world on his shoulders.
And you're pretty spot on too. I know, this is a little bit of the behind the scenes that comes with it too, that Rafe Judkins, the showrunner, said. He said, "We had started pulling lyrics from the books, and then Dave Hill, the writer headlining the block of episodes, actually started working on this idea of, quote, what if I told you a story about the last dragon and the breaking of the world, and it's very, very subtle." So you're pretty spot on. That's exactly what it is. It's about the last dragon.
Well, so I read that exact same article.
Oh, okay.
And that's where all I right. got that, but very specifically to the lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew, because I read that article too, I read those lyrics and I was like, okay, or not the lyrics. I read that interview and I was like, all right, got it. And then I went back and like listened to the song again. And I was just like, that is rough.
I feel like I'm going to need to go back and hear the song again for like a third time, just now that I know this background behind it. But even in addition to Tom Marilyn and, you know, and going past the song, you know, focusing more on my number two, like this character, like the way they set him up is to kind of almost be a little bit of maybe like a mentor figure to Matt in the lessons that he's teaching him. Slightly, and then again he comes in at the end to save them from Dana, who is about to kill them, all the way to the point where I don't know if anybody else noticed this, but one of the things I really loved about this character, and every time he was on screen in particular, I noticed it more upon my second viewing, is the score of the music. Anytime he makes an appearance on screen, it was like a guitar strum, almost like a cowboy stepping into frame.
Nice.
In a Western.
I think I made a very specific note. Tom's music seems like a Western.
Yeah.
That's what, that's my note.
That's exactly what it felt like to me.
When he walks, you can hear his spurs clanking. So it totally pulls you back to a Western. Between the music and the spurs clanking, that's immediately, like, it almost takes you out of it a bit, because it's so, like, where's Clint Eastwood?
Right. So I think also the visual, is like the way that they frame the shot, is that you saw his heels when he was coming up on Matt by the body.
Yeah.
You didn't necessarily know who it was, but you just see these heels appear, and you're like, who dat?
I made a note that as soon as you saw him and heard him, he felt very important and permanent.
Somehow. Right.
Yeah. But I mean, I kind of thought a little bit about Dana.
that was Dana was absolutely the rug out from under me.
Yeah.
I was like, oh no.
Yeah.
But I think that's almost it's kind of almost Game of Thrones-ish in that, like, don't get attached to any character.
Right.
Because you never know what the true outcome of that character is going to be.
Right.
Dana looked like someone who could have joined them and ended up turning against them. And now we have Tom who comes in, and I hope he's permanent for a while.
Yeah.
Because he's a fantastic character.
The actor is awesome. All right. That it for your number two?
That's it for my number two. I was talking about Tom.
Okay. My number two is also Dana. We've touched on most of this stuff. I'm just going to say, why do bad people, and by bad people, I mean, why do villains feel the need to tell what their plans are? All you had to do was keep Rand there, continue talking, wait for Matt to show up, and wait for the Fae to show up. Why do you need, like, okay, sure, it's harder because he's nice and he's sweet. Like, you tried to take him for a tumble, it didn't work out. All you have to do is leave. He'll hang out in there, you wait for the Fae to show up, and then, boom, bing, bang, boom, you're, you know, the next Ishmael. Why did you need to tell the...
Why do you need to monologue?
Yeah,
monologuing—that's it.
Yes, I mean the monologue. Once you got busted, or once you revealed, like, oh, the raid was too far. What? Who? Egwene? Oh, son of a bitch! Why did you need to say anything? Mm-hmm. Like, you just let them show up. I guess, you know, villains are cocky. I guess I don't know, but that was the one additional thing. She had some of the best lines of the episode. Oh, fantastic. Oh, anybody need a horse trader with no horses? Anybody?
Yeah, she's great.
Yeah, she was fantastic. And the character was great. And it would have been really cool to see her be a bigger part of the show. But I thought that she was definitely a necessary counterpoint to Tom, although we can't necessarily trust that Tom is not a dark friend. I thought she was a great introduction and then, you know, elimination to the show, because she was a dark friend introduction, right? She was the way that we found out what dark friends were. Mm-hmm. They do the one thing that I do kind of get irritated with is the amount of exposition that goes on. And I get it. They're trying to unload all this information, and I understand. Wendy, I don't know if you feel it that way or feel that way, but, and if you don't, fantastic. Great. Maybe you're just soaking up all the information. You're like, oh, sweet. I'm glad they told me what this is.
I think there is a little bit of dialoguing going on to give us that information, because it seems like there's a lot, you know.
There really is.
Yeah.
There really is.
I forgive that.
It's dumped on you.
But at times it does feel like monologuing or dialoguing.
Yeah. that was the one thing that bugged me was that I was like, why, Dana? Why? You could have been raised on high if you just kept your damn mouth shut.
She literally could have just left the room, and he would have never known he was locked in there. And
exactly.
Right. You know?
Exactly. So So that was all I had for number two, and we covered most of the rest of Dana. But like I said, she had some of the best lines.
Oh, when she ships Rand and Matt together.
Yeah.
Oh my god, yeah. Like, I forgot about that. Like, that was maybe, funny.
I don't know, like nobody will hear what you're doing if you want to be like a little tuck and tumble. Like,
yeah.
Like, what?
That was so funny.
What did she
funny.
Say? Tickle and
slap and tickle.
Slap and tickle. Yeah.
That was great.
There are some. I'll mention a couple of them at the end if they don't get mentioned beforehand. But there are a number of good lines in this episode, and I made note of a couple of them.
There was definitely some good humor in this one that I really, really appreciated.
Yeah, I made note of two of them in particular. If we don't get to them in our top three, I'll make mention of them towards the end in the notes.
I totally want to say one. Can I just try to
say one of them, and if it's not, I'll say it.
That's not how roads work.
That's one of them. That's not one of the two that I have.
I was literally grabbing my stomach and laughing. And like, oh, they say all roads lead there.
That's not
how roads work.
I'll mention the two that I have now. Because one of them actually does pertain to Dana. It's when they're outside chopping wood. And Rand says to Matt, he's like, come on, we'll take turns. And Matt's like, do you think she's up for it? And he's like, the wood, Matt.
I don't think I caught that one until the second time.
Yeah.
And then the other one is before they even get to that village and they're walking through the stones, Rand turns to Matt and he's like, think of the stories they'll tell of you one day. Matt Cathan, the man who walked while he was a little chilly.
That was another good one.
The chemistry between the two of them is fantastic.
I love Matt. He's still like my favorite of the four.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have a little bit of a change there because I personally feel okay. You know what? I'll wait till after we get done. I'll wait till after we get done to share my opinion on that. Not after we've done.
Well, because you're
like after our points,
and your change of opinion might actually be my number one. So
okay,
we'll see.
The Humana Honor Medicare Advantage Plan gives you $1,860 back each year in your Social Security check. Choose coverage that helps you keep more money in your pocket. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. The Part B Give Back benefit pays part or all of your Part B premium, and the amount may change based on the amount you pay for Part B. Limitations and restrictions may apply. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
But I think
all
Wendy's
right, so
up first.
Wendy, what
all
you
right.
got?
So my number one is Perrin.
Mine too. Yep.
So wolves seem to be really important, and they seem to be centering around Perrin. And again, this is all maybe a little bit of just speculation. Last episode, we saw the wolves licking Perrin's Trolloc wounds. From the Trolloc poison, and now Perrin is dreaming of wolves eating Layla while she's still alive, and then the wolves seem to be chasing Egwene and Perrin, but then it appears that the wolves were actually leading them to where they were going. And for me, like, I think ever since the first episode, my big question has been, who is the dragon as a non-book reader? And so I've decided it can't be Egwene because that seems like too logical of a choice. So I'm thinking that maybe all of this is leading to the fact that it's Perrin and that he's having all these important dreams. But I could just be speculation.
Well, the dream where the same fiery-eyed mouth,
the fiery-eyed guy, yeah.
Yeah, that's uh-huh. That's. I would say that is a clue. Mm-hmm. Although we only saw Rand get the dream in the bat vomiting episode.
Yes, that is true. Yeah,
and then here we don't, I mean, what we didn't see was, did we see, we didn't see Rand or Matt or Egwene have similar type dreams.
No.
Although that wolves eating Layla scene was straight out of GOT. Like, I was like, wow, that is really dark. Graphic.
And
super dark.
Yeah, and it's obvious that he's still tortured by losing his wife in that manner, you know, and then being torn away from everything he knew and people he loved killed. So he's still, you know, probably has some PTSD going on, which is understandable, but they seemed important. And the wolves, like, I thought the scenes with Egwene and Perrin were probably my least favorite of this episode, just because you couldn't figure out what the point was or where they were going.
I thought it was super boring.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh my God.
But yet, like, when they were running. But when they were, like, when they were huddling up by the fire and it was obviously really cold and they were both pretty distraught and just those constant wolves howling in the background, it was definitely eerie and foreboding. I think we were just probably impatient to see where it was all going.
That is fair, and yeah. I will concede the point that I just want to find out what's going on.
Yeah.
It was interesting seeing them meet the Tinkers and the song and whatnot, but I was just like, oh God, get to the point.
Yeah.
To be fair, that was on my second watch, because in my mind, I'm like waiting for the, you know, waiting to get to Breen Spring and the Dark Friend and all that. So, like, I think that maybe they suffered a little bit, in my opinion, because of how good the other portions of the episode were. But yeah, that was just me.
Yeah, I was just gonna say I'll kind of piggyback on that with my number one as well. Which was also Perrin, and basically the trauma that he is suffering, he is still very clearly suffering from the way that Layla died. It was an accidental death, but he was the one that killed her. And he still has not yet revealed that to anybody in the party. So that's still something he's keeping within. I looked at the scene a little bit different, though, with the wolves. I mean, in the last episode, we did get the wolves that approached him and licked his wounds. So obviously they were aiding him in some way. And then in this episode, we see the wolves, what we believed at first was them chasing them. And then turns out in the end that it was the wolves directing them to where they needed to be in order to continue on with their path. So when you put those two things together, to me, it's sort of stands out a little bit that the wolves are allies to Perrin in some way, shape or form. But then you have the nightmare sequence that he has that shows the wolves, you know, basically eating Layla's corpse, as dark as that was. Like you said, very Game of Thrones. But what stood out to me a little bit differently about the nightmare was we saw that, like you said, that burning face, which I assume is a fade haunting his nightmare. I don't know.
Okay.
That's what it stood out to me.
Although they're eyes and they're the eyeless,
oh yeah,
right?
And the fades are the eyeless. So it's some kind of other dark presence then that's haunting his nightmare. I took that as in a sense that, okay, well maybe whatever this dark presence is using these wolves against him. These wolves are trying to show in actuality that they're allies to him in some way. And this dark power is kind of trying to negate that by making him afraid of them so that he can't use that to his own advantage, if that makes sense.
No, yeah, absolutely. That makes sense.
So showing him, giving him a nightmare that is filled with wolves and the wolves devouring his wife, that's going to make you afraid of wolves. So it's going to make you very hesitant to trust them if they are indeed allies to you in some way.
Right.
So that's kind of how I looked at that scene.
That's fair. I had not even thought about that, but yeah. If you take something, I mean, you could just be like, oh, those are all the things he's experienced and that's what's in his head. So he's constantly thinking about Layla and now he's thinking about the wolves. But it could just be a dream until you have, as you said, this dark presence come in and to surprise you awake, so that you can, you know, get up and continue running.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's that. I had not thought about it that way. That's cool.
I mean, if that fade or whatever it is was not in that nightmare with him, I would have just assumed it was him basically just having a nightmare about wolves. But to me, seeing that presence in the dream that we don't know what it is yet, that to me seems it's like it's some kind of force trying to force him in a different direction than the way he's supposed to be going. And in essence, that direction, at least from what I can see so far, is to make him afraid of these wolves that he should not be afraid of.
Yeah.
That
sounds right.
Yeah, that's really the only thing additional I had in when it came to Perrin. But I agree with you. I found that whole storyline, even leading up to them meeting the Tinkers at the end, it's kind of, who are in essence gypsies. I found it kind of boring. Like, I'm hoping we get more of that story.
Yeah.
Later.
I wanted to know where it was going, and it kind of went nowhere.
Yeah, because the last we see them, they meet these people, they're sitting at the fire, and then they start scarfing their food, and then we never see them again for the rest of the episode.
Right. Going back to another Stephen King, where they hungry.
But yeah, that was my number one.
All right, so my number one is, yes, it's general, but some of the things that we find out about our characters. And it's these tiny details, and I've been watching or been rewatching The Office and Parks and Rec, and one of the things that Greg Daniels, the showrunner, or the initial showrunner, the show creator, talks about is that, like, the specifics, make it specific, make it, you know, if you know more about characters, you can, and like specific details, then you care about them. You can, maybe you can't identify with, you know, we'll just say, for example, Dwight in The Office is like, it's not that you're like, oh, I'm totally like that guy, but there are so many very specific things, like he's a Mennonite and he's, you know, or a Pennsylvania Dutch or whatever. And these very specific things about them, and that makes you identify with them. So, like, for example, we find out that Matt has an eye for older women.
Yeah.
So, and by older, I mean, you know, maybe in, you know, their 30s or 40s as opposed to in their, you know, grandmothers. Not that you can't be a grandmother in your 40s. I'm just saying. But yeah, not an older, but yeah, someone in, you know, 20 or so years older than him. And so that's just something you're like, oh, that's interesting. Matt was being kind of a douche, or maybe kind of a prick like his dad. We did find out more about the bond between Lan and Moraine, and then I've heard about your, you know, the bond and how you feel what she feels. Well, this is going to hurt. I thought that was like, well, that's not great.
She seemed to be taking a little pleasure out of that too.
Right. The fact that Dana was like, when you, again, just small details, right? So Dana is literally throwing all the leftover beer, leftover food, whatever, into the stew that Matt and Rand had just eaten.
I didn't even pick up on that.
I was like, there's like, you know, a pig hoof in there. And then she's like taking all the beers, leftover beers, just smells them and then just tosses them into the stew. I was like, oh, that's, I think it was Rand who like looked at it. He was like, oh, it might've been Matt. But, and then more specifically, I think that, as you mentioned, Ben, Tom is way more than he appears to be. Mm-hmm. He knows, and this is one of the more things from my number three, the references to the book, the Aiel. This was an Aiel, a fearful or a fearless warrior who, you know, from a place called Threefold Land. And the things that he said when he buried him, almost sounded like very similar to the Tinkers, where almost like a ceremony rather than, you know, may you always find water and shade. The words sounded very rehearsed, and these are things that you say whenever you give a eulogy or whatever for an Aiel.
Yeah. And you know what? On that note, too, real quick, that was one of the scenes that really drew me to Tom as a character, too, especially when he's talking about how there are two different kinds of Aiel. Well, an Aiel kind of almost exists as two different people, and it's all a matter of whether or not the cloth is covering their face or not. Mm-hmm. And when he's going into that conversation about Matt, explaining that to him and how these people were afraid of something they didn't understand, that really spoke volumes about how worldly Tom really is.
Right.
He is. He knows so much more than just a bard in a town.
Mm-hmm.
That's absolutely what really, that's what really drew me into that character.
Yeah. Look, that whole scene between him and Matt, where he, you know, where he, hey, you know, what are you doing here? I'm here to loot the corpse. He doesn't need the money if he's got any. And Matt's like, hey, we've all fell on hard times. Do what you got to do. Let me know when you're done.
Tom, and Tom said that. You said Matt said that.
Sorry, yeah. Tom said that.
Tom said that to Matt. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, so that very specifically made me go, this is definitely an elderly father figure. This is the, you know, this is the black janitor in Rudy, who is going to offer sage wisdom, and I look forward to more Tom in the future.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the details, those were things that really drew me in and made me connect with the characters on the screen, and the fact that, I mean, the going back to what you guys are talking about. Your number ones, like, Perrin is just sitting and brooding over his death or his wife's death. And I'm not saying that he shouldn't. I'm not saying that he shouldn't be upset and whatnot, but it was just uninteresting. And I talked about Perrin being one of my early favorites, and now I'm kind of like, I don't really care about this storyline.
Well, it's two full episodes of that. And it feels important and like it's going to go somewhere, but it hasn't yet. So we're just impatient. You know, we want what we want. We want it all now.
Yeah. I saw a couple notes of people online, and I'm curious if either one of you two picked up on this too, but I saw a couple people make mention online about how they felt that scene, all the scenes with Perrin and Egwene, almost made it feel like they were building a romantic connection between them. And I was like, I didn't pick up on that at all. Especially the trauma that he's still suffering from killing Layla. There's no way they're going to be working on putting the two of them together.
I think if anything, Perrin felt like he had to protect and save her because he didn't save Layla.
Exactly. Yeah.
I felt it was like siblings.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It was very much a brother sister. Interaction, not any type. I didn't see any kind of romantic.
Right.
I didn't interpret it romantically at all.
Neither did I. If some people see it that way, that's the way they see it. I didn't see that at all.
Yeah. That's all I have to say about that, or at least about what you said, Ben. You guys have any notes?
Wendy, anything?
Yeah. I thought it was interesting that Egwene was able to conjure fire.
She's learning real fast.
Yeah. I thought it was funny. Perrin said, can you conjure some food and water while you're at it? What did you think of Rosamund Pike's performance in this episode?
What performance?
For one of the headliners, or for the headlining star, she had very little to do.
It was a little odd because we get it. She's catatonic. But they kept coming back to her, so you kept kind of expecting something to change, but it never really did. I just thought it was a little of a misbeat.
You know what, though? But I do, like, you make mention of, for the headlining star, I do appreciate the fact that this is a show that is not relying on the big name to get them through. They are letting these other characters tell their own story.
Yeah.
So,
and I'm sure that's why they did it in that way, is to let the other stories shine. Lan. I feel like he's the person I don't know the most. Like, we've seen him a lot, but he doesn't really give anything away of his character. But he's very interesting, and I want to know more about him. And I thought it was, Naivne, she knows stuff about him, and I thought all of that was interesting. Like, she knew about the bond between Moraine and Lan, and I really want to know more about that, because he seems extremely loyal and dedicated, and very, like, he hasn't faltered, not once. He's, you know, got his eye on the prize of what his priorities are. So I wanted to see more about Lan.
I thought it was really cool that, you know, when Nynaeve approached Lan about that, he was like, is she, you know, why would she leave him and leave my friends if she cared about them? And he was like, oh no, she didn't leave him, I did.
Yeah.
And he took full responsibility for, I mean, and don't get me wrong, you know, he basically almost got them killed in Shardalgoth. And then,
I mean, because of that, he didn't have other options, though.
Right. I'm not saying it was the wrong choice. I just meant that, like, yes, like, he's the one who took the actions. It wasn't Moraine. She was unconscious.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
And then I thought Breen Spring was very interesting. It seems much more rough and dangerous than Two Rivers.
Mm-hmm.
It had a more ominous feel to it right away from the very look of it. There's a skeleton in an iron cage hanging at the entrance to the village, which I looked up, and this is called Gibbeting. And it refers to the use of a gallows-type structure from which the dead or dying bodies of criminals were hanged. This is real. It was used, it could also be used as a method of execution where they just left them there until they died. But this was real. It was recorded as early as the Roman Empire and the Old Testament, and as late as the early 1800s, repopularized in the era of Caribbean pirates. The pirates did it.
And oh, yeah.
People capturing the pirates did it.
Yeah, you see that in Pirates of the Caribbean, uh-huh. where you see the skeletons hanging from the cages.
And that's all real. And then my last note that I had was the people that Perrin and Egwene run into at the end are the traveling people called the Tuatha'an. And they seemed very similar to real-life Romani people. And I thought that was obviously a nod to the Romani. I thought that was interesting. Don't know where it's going.
Sure. But the gypsies who steal your children or your gold. All of those great, awesome stereotypes where we make snap judgments on people just because of not even personal experience, but stories.
Right.
Mm. I only have two notes left to talk about. First, did anybody else happen to notice that Rand was able to break down an iron line door that three men of his own size were not supposed to get through?
Yeah.
Yeah, super powered. I didn't
make a note of that, but you're right.
Super powered Rand.
Yeah. Yep. Is that adrenaline or is that something more? We're going to have to wait to find out.
Yeah.
And the other thing I have to make mention of, too, and this is more stylistic, is, like, we talked last week's episode with the seeing the reflection of the Aes Sedai burning in the silver chalice. This one, the scene that stands out to me most is after Tom throws the dagger through Dana's throat and Dana falls and the blood pools into the puddle. That transition from the blood puddle into the tree line was beautiful.
That was so amazing.
Like, I watched that and I was like, whoa, that was amazing.
I have to go back and look at it.
That was a hell of a transition.
It is fantastic, Wendy. Like, it is so good.
It's when after Tom kills Dana and her blood is flowing into the puddle, Just watch that scene. Wow. The transition into the next scene is stunning. It's dark because it's using blood as a transition.
Yeah.
But it is stunning. It is so well done. That's it. That's all I had for notes.
I kind of mentioned this before, but the only note that I haven't we haven't kind of talked about was the we do not know the song. You know, your fire warms our spirit, or your welcome warms our spirit as the fire warms our flesh, but we do not know the song. From the Tuathuan to anyone that they meet. And I'm looking forward, just like you, Wendy, I'm looking forward to finding out more about those characters and seeing what their stories are.
Or as Perrin calls it, I don't know the song.
Yeah, I don't know the song.
I don't know the song.
That's all I got. All right. Anybody else have anything before we move on?
All I know is I'm really looking forward to episode 4 in the way that this episode ends.
Yeah.
I'm going to watch it in about a half hour.
Nice. All right, we'll take a break. There's more to come. Stay with us. And we're back. Moving on to news about the Wheel of Time. Not too much more, but we did. I did read that. In fact, we talked about Matt being, a popular character, and in us, like Matt's, the work has been that's been going on. He's actually been recast in season 2, which. Is a little bit shocking. And
seriously?
Seriously.
Oh man.
Barney that. Harris is out, and Donald Finn is in. I don't know who Donald Finn is, but I haven't like looked him up and researched him, but and it's weird because it's very much, hey, we really appreciate the work that Barney's done, but hey, Donald's done some great work on season 2 and really looking forward to it. So it's very much not like there's no one, no backstabbing, no public
that
outcry.
You know of.
Right. It seems very private and yeah. very much under the rug as to, because normally you would hear like, oh, hey, Barney Harris had a different thing that he had been obligated to or whatever, had a family emergency and couldn't continue participating, whatever. It's very much like, oh, it just, Barney did great work and Donald's doing great work too.
And that explains why Donald Finn's page is, one of the most popular pages on the wiki. Cause I didn't realize that he was recast. That's, it's a wait and see.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see how it goes. I mean, but yeah,
weird,
I think Barney
though,
Harris has
to
been
recast
doing
completely.
Great.
Yeah.
That's especially from one season, the first season to the next.
Yeah.
And that really speaks volumes too, that we're already upset about this after only 3 episodes.
And it's a main character. It's not like the mountain. You know what I mean?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The 3 different mountains.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I think that,
No, I liked him. I thought he was just doing a great job.
It's almost like we're talking like he's died.
I know.
we have like 5 more episodes of him, but, I did find that was, like I said, I found it odd that there's no backbiting or anything like that. It's just, all right, cool. But that's all we have as far as news goes. Moving on to listener feedback, listener responses from Le Facebook.
So our first one comes from Christy Kopich. I'm really enjoying everything about it so far, as are we.
Yeah.
Except for Perrin's storyline in this one. Sorry.
Pake Allen says, this episode really solidified my interest in this show. I wasn't fully sure after episode 1. Episode 2 was better and really started setting things up, but I was hooked in this one. Having the group split into different duos and meeting really interesting other people. Tom is awesome. Yes.
Thanks, we Pake. Concur.
Yeah.
Tom is, in fact, awesome. Lindsay Schlicht. I am so glad Nynaeve survived. I kind of figured she had, but it's nice to know for sure. She's such a tough, smart character. I'm glad we still have her. So, again, it seems the wolves are somehow helping them, or at least helping Perrin? The people they meet seem nice. Probably means there's some insane cannibals or something. It's too bad Dana turned out to be evil. I really enjoyed her character until that reveal and was hoping she'd somehow join the main cast on the journey. Rand being able to break down that unbreakable door, some kind of hint to him having some sort of power. Dana mentioning Five, who could be the dragon. Maybe Nynaeve? Nynaeve? Yeah. How do I even say it? I don't know. The pooling blood image transitioning to the tree skyline was absolutely fantastic.
Right?
This dragon reborn dude should be interesting. Such a great episode. So many questions.
I'm telling you, Wendy, you got to go back and check out that.
Yeah, I got to go back now.
It's so good.
It's so good. From Shay Wide, this episode makes me want more, starting to really like where the series is going. Can't wait to see more about... is that Aiel?
Aiel.
Tom was great, but I miss his mustaches. That's got to be in reference to the actor.
Yeah, in the book, he had long, flowing white mustaches.
Oh, okay. All right. Hey, he could get them later. Time jumps.
Anna Iglesias says, I like it so far.
Danny Lundy, I've read the books. It went way off the rails in episode one. Some characters are actually the opposite of book counterparts. You're not wrong, Danny. But hopefully you're still interested in the show. You continue to watch. And if you're not, then I'm sorry. I know that, beloved source material can be tough to depart from. But hopefully you keep watching.
Yeah. From Kay Joslin, I read the books, but it's been a while and my memory isn't the best, so hopefully I'll enjoy it more by not remembering the original. Love seeing Roos as Tam Althor. Matt and Lan are great. Going to take me a while to warm up to Rand, though.
I will say that the Rand is... I would say that this episode, I think he showed a little bit more character. In the first... he was kind of blah in the first episode. I think we talked about that. He was kind of blah in the first episode, and the second episode kind of pigheaded. But in this one, he definitely has his capabilities. I thought he was really charming with Dana.
Yeah, he was sweet. Yeah.
Yeah, and Kate mentioned Tam too, who we haven't seen since first episode, but I'm sure we're gonna see him again.
And then Scott Pike wrote in, and he's responding to my question about episode two, which was, did Matt handling and grabbing the dagger out of that box, is that what caused the dark mist to attack? And he responded by saying, the dark mist would have attacked regardless of the dagger. It comes out at night. That's the reason why the city is avoided.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So thanks for that, Scott.
I didn't think about the fact that, like, dusk had fallen when all that stuff started to happen. It just happened to be when Matt woke up. The timing was unfortunate.
Yeah.
All right. And we have one call from Steve Brown. Let's see what he's got to say.
Hello, House Podcastica. This is Steve, and this is going to be for episode 3 of The Wheel of Time.
Oh, did that one Trolloc just kill the other Trolloc because he was wounded and he's eating them now?
Well, this is cool that we have the three separate groups now that are going to be traveling. And did this guy keep the dagger from the city, you think? That's not how roads work. Totally innocuous. They keep saying wisdom and I flash back to the 80s Emilio Estevez movie. I have done that to people. I said you could ask, not that I'd answer. Well, I guess this episode's going to be a lot of walking. I wonder if the trees are going to walk as well. Well, Matt has become quite the Debbie Downer. I don't know if that's because of the dagger he's carrying or that's just his general disposition. Enter into the cage. Is there a fighting ring here? But now he's serving beer, so at least he's working. I love how Perrin can't remember the whole phrase. He's just like, we don't know the song. Yeah, believe me, you don't want to see a Trolloc, okay? I mean... But you might be flirting with Rand as well. Uh-oh. This is... Oh my goodness, who is this? This Dana is not what she seems, apparently. Okay, what does that mean that he was strong enough to break down that door? Okay, I just had to pause it, because even they did. They went, what do you mean five? There's only four of us. Oh, that was a cool transition from the blood to the tree line.
Well, I'm in. I'm in. I love the first three episodes, and I can't wait to hear you guys talk about them, because whew, there's a lot to break down in these.
That's awesome, Steve. I'm glad you're in. This is there's a lot of, as you said, there's a lot of stuff going on.
Steve is like, if you don't have time to listen to our podcast, he just wraps it all up in 60 seconds.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's live Steving at its best.
Yeah.
I think he hit on every major point that we talked about. There's a lot to unpack. Well, you pretty much unpacked it all, bud.
I know. 60 seconds. What have we been doing?
including the transition that Wendy needs to see.
All right. So, yeah, that was fantastic. I appreciate it, Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
Appreciate the feedback, Steve. All right. That's our show. Thanks for listening, everybody. If you'd like to write in or record a message and like Steve did and send it in, you can email it to talk@podcastica.com.
Check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/podcastica.
And we are also on Twitter @podcastica.
All right. So speaking of Podcastica, I'm going to get all three this time. So Strange Indeed is covering Lock and Key about halfway through the current season right now. Just started on Dexter. And then the Great British Bake Off final literally released today.
I just watched it. Which was amazing.
It was so amazing.
I really need to get caught up on that show.
It's
I'm like two seasons.
It's such a palate cleanser, Ben.
I love the show. I'm just like three seasons behind.
It's like the sweetest thing on TV.
Just watch this season. It's an anthology. You don't need other seasons.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the beauty of it, too, is because it's a competition show. I don't have to have seen every season before watching this one.
I think I can go back and watch the last four seasons. Yeah, I got into it late, but I love it.
This season was really, really good.
It was, and they're such sweet people, or they pretend to be. Well,
yeah.
Well, I mean, and that's the thing too. Like, I'm so used to watching Gordon Ramsay,
right? Yeah. Top Chef.
The first time I watched Great British Bake Off, I'm like, they're so polite.
Yeah.
They are. They're so sweet together. It's really nice. I just want to say, I usually don't listen to Strange Indeed because I just have such trouble catching up on everything. But I've been listening to them all through Lisey's Story, Midnight Mass. Now I'm watching Lock and Key and Dexter and, of course, The Great British Bake Off. And they're just knocking it out of the park. It's great. And I know you were on Lisey's Story. It's just amazing. I have loved everything they're doing.
Yeah, I'm actually listening. I'm about halfway through their latest episode of Dexter. And
yep.
Yeah, Paik and Rima's Dexter coverage has been awesome.
So, yeah, they're such super fans.
I just don't have time. And so I don't listen to the Dexter ones. I'm having a hard time keeping up with mine, with Lock and Key and then other shows that I'm watching that I just can't even name off the top of my head.
I think it should be
Wheel of Time, you know.
But I think it should also be pointed out your level of commitment in the fact that we are currently recording and you are in your car.
For a little behind the scenes
because you're out of town, but you're still committed to recording the podcast. So yeah.
Family vacation, but then when three episodes of Watt drop, like you got to take care of business.
Yeah,
yep.
Exactly. It's commitment. It's commitment.
And then Walking Dead cast covering World Beyond's almost done. I think there might be one episode left if you are on AMC Plus or something like that. And then Fear the Walking Dead. And then upcoming on this podcast, Book of Boba Fett and Cobra Kai.
Yeah, I'm excited about Cobra Kai and Boba Fett.
Oh, yeah. I'm excited about both of those, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those look really, really good. Anything else?
No, not that. I think you actually covered everything this time.
Sweet. Nailed it.
What about Wilhelm? What are you doing on Wilhelm, Ben?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I actually get to pitch my own on this one.
Yeah.
We took a break for Thanksgiving, but there's a number of episodes coming up for December. Our friend Eric is going to be joining me, which I'm really excited about because I've never podcasted with him before. We're going to be talking about the Matrix franchise because the new Matrix is coming out.
Oh, boy. Do I want to hear Eric talk about the Matrix? Yes, I do.
Yeah. Eric is... As we've learned, Eric is very, very intelligent in his points that he makes when it comes to a lot of things. So, and The Matrix is that kind of movie where I'm like, I'm really looking forward to diving into these with Eric.
Yeah, that'll be absolutely great.
But then also, just in addition to the month of December, I have three holiday episodes following that. The first is Die Hard a Christmas movie, and other unorthodox holiday films like Gremlins and
yes,
stuff like
that. Podcast done.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Over 5 minutes.
Is it a Christmas movie, it is one of the best Christmas movies. Yeah.
Well, I actually want to try and bring somebody on who disagrees so we can kind of debate it a little bit. And then I'm going to bring on two people for an episode, and we're going to reveal our top three favorite movie Santas. And then Christmas Eve, we're just going to do a straight up top five favorite holiday films. And that's going to wrap up Wilhelm for the year.
That's great.
Good deal.
Yep.
All right. Next time on this podcast, we cover Wheel of Time Season 1, Episode 4, The Dragon Reborn. And I'm assuming it's going to be in reference to this new Dragon Reborn.
That's what I'm thinking now.
Our Dragon Reborn or something.
Yeah, I'm getting ready to watch it in 5 minutes.
Nice. All right, that's our show.
Thanks for listening.
Let the dragon ride again on the winds of time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.